You know what time it is? That's right, it's a new ad. And this time I have two amazing stories for you to check out. First one is about a friend Saving Throw, who writes a story called So When Am I a Hero? It's a system apocalypse that is quite frankly amazing. I don't like system apocalypses usually, and I devoured that one. So go and check it out. There's a link below the podcast. The second one is from another friend of mine, because I have two friends, called The Infinity Dungeon by Reject Humanity. Premise is actually pretty cool. A guy goes hiking on the Appalachian Trails and stumbles into the only and first dungeon in the world, and he's the only person on Earth with a system, at least for a while. All right, go check him out. I appreciate it a lot, and I'll see you next time.
Patreon is a job. Treat it like one. I have a chapter that comes out at the exact same time. Some of my best growth was after I had a big fluff up with a chapter and people like hated it. And I saw like massive downturn in like new readers and such. But like I got all of that back and more just by like, being consistent with chapters. Every Monday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a chapter comes out. Whether that's once a month and you want to put out one chapter a month, I think that would be perfectly viable. The Mother of Learning way with like one massive chapter once a month, as long as it's at the same time every month. You just need consistency.
This is the Crit RPG Podcast, your one-stop shop for everything Lit RPG, Progression Fantasy, and Royal Road. Hi everyone, and welcome to the Crit RPG Podcast, the only podcast that is hot for Arctic Fox. With me today is C. Mantis, who is the author of Path of Ascension. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. It's always funny to pretend that we haven't been talking for about
an
hour.
Yeah, we've talked for the last 52 minutes, it says.
You have been warned. Mr. Mantis here likes to go off on tangents, and if you've been to this podcast before, you know that I cannot resist tangents. So we'll be here for the next 4 hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'll be fun.
Maybe it'll be fun.
Hopefully.
Maybe it will be like one of those like YouTube videos where it's like 24 hours of like a gardening stream.
Exactly. Just white noise to fall asleep to. Exactly. Just I like love those actions.
24 hours of like two progression fantasy authors talking about stats.
Oh no, okay. Not the stats. The stats just get you in trouble.
Yeah, it's like reading a stat block the entire time. So you were writing The Path of Ascension. Tell us what it's about, and then tell me why and how that book.
So Path of Ascension is a typical progression fantasy about a main character, Matt. He grows up in this magical world, and then there's this path to power that's basically like a race to power, through power, like you're just against the odds with minimum help and, you know, the typical progression fantasy stuff. But I wanted to
You can do that better. Like mention maybe that it's like pseudo sci-fi, like that's cool.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
You're putting like cultivation stuff in there, like it's a really good book. Give yourself credit.
No, exactly, but like that's where the idea came from. It's like I just wanted a like the typical progression fantasy system, but I didn't like a lot of the tropes. I didn't like empires that were evil to be evil, so I made the main character live in the empire, and it's a pretty decent place that's trying to do better. I didn't like where every fantasy novel seemed to be medieval setting. So I was like, why can't they have tech? These are like immortal people. And like, why, like they have magic and infinitely long lives. And like, there's the argument of like, oh, if Aristotle was still around, he'd still be arguing for his, you know, earth centric models of the universe. But like, maybe a lot of those guys sure had their pride and stuff, but like I would like to think that if they had unlimited lifespans and could be presented with irrefutable evidence, they could change their theories and use their knowledge to advance, you know, science as we saw it. It would just happen a lot faster, because now you have Aristotle and Newton arguing together, and I'm sure there would have been some great conversations there, kind of thing. So like, why is society always in the rut, in like a dumpster? So I was like, this is sci-fi, basically. Like, they have equivalent Earth tech because I'm not clever enough to come up with future tech. Same thing with like a functional government. Why does every fantasy novel have a terrible government that should not function in any way, shape, or form? And I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to have an actual decent government. Not perfect, because I think perfect's boring, but like, why? And that's how I landed on Path of Ascension. It was just a bunch of like, I didn't like this, and I'm going to do it this way, and it has led me to endless problems. It's great.
There's two reasons why authors write. One of them is like, I have the story in my heart, and I need to tell the world about it. And the other one is spite.
Yep, nope. I wish I was the first, but I am 100% second.
Which is so weird. Yeah.
I literally wrote, like, the initial inspiration for Matt's power came from a novel where it's a webtoon, like, I have unlimited mana in the apocalypse, and I did not like how they handled that at all. It was, the main character has unlimited mana, and he, from literal, like, chapter 5, he goes into being incredibly overpowered for very contrived reasons. Like, then you could tell the novel was set up all around this power and this main character, and the world, like the magic system was completely catered to letting him be the most special person that ever existed. And then it culminates in the fact that the world itself, Earth, is giving him unlimited mana because main character reasons. And I hated that so much that I was like, how could I do an unlimited mana thing without it being the main character being the super special, awesome person that the world loves? And I was like, oh, I'm going to do it this way. And then that idea changed, and that idea changed, and that idea changed. And then that's how I landed on the talent system. I was like, how can I give like a lit RPG setting where everybody has something unique? Because like, the main character shouldn't be the only one to have something unique. That's boring. So let's give everybody something unique. How do we do that? And that's how I came up with the talent system, and having it be absolutely bonkers and having very little constraint, and like, it breaks the rules. There are some rules I have for it. No time travel, because time travel is very confusing and I'm not that smart. No resurrecting the dead, because stakes are stakes for a reason. They don't just go in vampires' hearts, they should go in the reader's hearts as well. Exactly. And then the third one is I hate when novels, especially cultivation novels, will have like realms above realms that the main character will eventually travel to. I don't mind the realms themselves. What I mind is that every novel seems to have the big bad guy is somebody from a higher realm who is interacting with the lower realm for reasons. And it's mostly just to give the main character a reason to go up higher and punch somebody else. And I said, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, you weren't really like going to handle the realmifications.
Yeah, it's that's just why I did that. So I'm 100% a spite author. I love the story, don't get me wrong, but like, I started writing for spite. I was like, everything else is trash. I need my own novel to be good because I've caught up with everything else. And then that's kind of how we got here.
I so wish I could like write like my spite stuff, not the same spite as your spite.
Yeah.
So like I wish I could like really enjoy writing like standard progression fantasy and like really going deep into the system and just like having the character enjoy leveling or enjoy getting stronger for that sake almost, right? But I mean, I'm not saying that's exclusively what you're doing, but in the end, that's like the mechanism behind it. I love reading it. I just can't write it. So,
yeah, no, it's gonna be hard sometimes because the giving your character drive is like, obviously you need like the character needs motive, means, and reason, but like giving that to them and having it come across for the reader as like a good thing is kind of hard sometimes. Like you said, I did it because I just had my main character enjoy fighting things and like leveling up basically. That solves a lot of issues. Like, oh, why is he pushing this hard? Well, one, he enjoys it. And, like, everybody can understand that to a degree. Because, like, you try to show them enjoying it, getting the thrill, getting the loot, the dopamine hit when number go up. But it can be very easy to kind of oversimplify it, but end up in a corner where, oh, yeah, your main character's just a murder hobo, and they're kind of a psychopath.
Yeah, and yeah.
That doesn't sound fun to write to me, at least. I don't want to write that.
I mean, was it Dakota Crowd who wrote Full Murder Hobo?
Yeah, that was great, though.
Yeah. I mean, if you're embracing it, that's fine.
Yeah, because that's almost a counter trope at that point. Like, yeah. He's fully acknowledging the silliness of the trope in doing so. He's going deep into it. That's fun.
Hey, I have the story that I really want to write, and it is very, pardon my French, Oonga Boonga Noomba. But I can't fall in love with the system because the system doesn't really click for me yet. And the other one is like the main character is a psychopath. So he's like, he has no issue stabbing people, right? Meets the guy. Guy's like, we should stick together. They're like, nah, not really. Just walks away and like watches him get annihilated by like an orbital strike or whatever.
He's
like,
that's funny.
Sticking together is bad, you see? But making that guy relatable and not like, because like psychopaths are not relatable. If you look into their brains, like they are not, they're fucking assholes.
What's funny is a lot of authors end up writing psychopaths, whether they mean to or not, which is kind of amusing. And I don't understand how they do it.
It's been a while.
I get how they do it. It's just, but like so many, like, oh, the world is ending, lit RPGs or, you know, apocalypse-esque. Oh. And it's like, so this average guy who works at worked at an office 2 weeks ago is now murdering, other sentient beings by the bucketful and not caring at all and with no mental trauma. And like you can argue, oh, they're in a hard situation and people react, you know, to preserve their life. Understandable. Mm. Fully agree. But there's a certain point where it's just like, I think you just want to write a murder hobo, man.
Like, and I mean, to some degree that's okay.
But yeah, exactly.
You always need to, like, there's always this moment where, let's say the character like surpasses the first hurdle. And their life is no longer in danger. Why do they keep doing what they're doing?
Exactly.
I recently came across this problem in my book too. I was like, shit, I've never really explored the reason why this character does anything. Fuck.
And I think that's why you see a lot of authors do I want to call it the treadmill of escalation.
Yeah.
Of like, you know what I mean? Where they never give their character a break because it's just one problem after another. Solving problem A starts problem C. So then when they're done problem A, problem C starting to rear its head, but oh no, you have problem B pops up beforehand and they fix that. That somehow inadvertently triggers problem D, but now problem C is coming to get them. And then you end up having this treadmill of escalation into punching gods out of the sky. And it's just like, that's kind of, I think, why it happens to a lot of authors, because it's like, oh, I don't, if I give him a moment to breathe, he's just gonna like go
have emotions,
become a hermit. He's gonna become a hermit and like break down and turn into a mess. Like,
yeah. And hello YouTube, I am in this podcast and I don't like it. Number two is like, that's exactly what happens, right? Because like, that's You're the second epiphany you've given me today. Really, really good stuff. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Is like, you summarized pretty well what I was encountering while I was actually writing book two on it, because I really felt like, shit, I need to like have a good reason and still like wrestle this reason into this character somehow, because otherwise this is going to be like this escalation spiral, and it was an escalation spiral the entire time of the first book. So.
And that can be fun. Like, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Escalation spirals are, they can be great tools in a toolbox. But like every tool, you got to know when to put it down. I am not this clever. Also, no, like this isn't me coming up with this stuff on the spot. I have found the trick to becoming a better author is to not be an author. I go be a YouTube degenerate, and I will watch movie breakdowns of like people like reviewing movies. And like, there's one channel I love, CinemaSticks. He's a YouTuber and he does like, oh, here's, I don't know, what's the recent move thing he's done? Here's a breakdown of Inglourious Basterds, the scene where, like, the first scene where the farmer is getting interrogated by Lanz Honda, the bad guy of the movie. And he'll break down like the narrative reasons, like framing, he'll break down emotions and stuff like that. And it's a different medium. So like, I'm not stressed about watching and I'm enjoying what I'm watching, but it's also a movie is just a book taken to the visual form to a lot of degrees. And it's like, I can use a lot of what they'll talk about, and I'll do that for anything popular or popular that was bad. Like when some TV show fails and like, when Lord of Power failed really hard, and like I was super keen on watching those videos of like why people didn't like it, and like breaking down issues in the pacing and the plot and insert other problem here. And I try to take those lessons and apply them to being a novelist, because it's similar enough, and it helps me not have to think about these super clever things, but then I can regurgitate them here and sound very intelligent.
Yes. And exactly. Unfortunately, you're succeeding with it.
Like, but yeah, keep, no, I would definitely notes. Check those. I love those. CinemaSticks is a great channel to start with. He does like a breakdown every week, and he's a fantastic YouTube channel. He's about to hit 1 million subscribers. So still kind of small as those things go. But it's, yeah, he has great
shot
content.
To the heart, and you're too plain. I mean, what am I? Chopped liver? No,
the YouTube is harsh. I couldn't YouTube's be a YouTuber. Harsh. Like,
and yeah,
these are people with 1 million views every like week or something, and it's like not even their full-time job because it's just that cutthroat. It's like oof.
It's like I think I can be completely free about this. I'm averaging about like $12 a month out of YouTube.
Yeah, no, people vastly overestimate how much YouTube actually pays people. I had a buddy who did YouTube for a while with like travel vlogs and stuff, and you're not making a lot for most people. Like, I'm sure, you know, insert big name here is making a bajillion dollars on YouTube, but everybody below them isn't.
It's the typical, like, in the internet, winner takes it all.
Yeah.
So the top 5% are earning more than the like entire 95% below.
It's 100% just, believe that.
It's. I mean, the current world works how it works. And it's perfectly fine with me, actually. But of course this like system will replicate itself in its subsidiary systems, right?
Yeah.
So if you have a world in which like a handful of billionaires have like more money than 50% of like 99% of the rest of the world combined, or like 95% of the rest of the world combined, then you will also find these same systems in any other sphere, like entertainment, any sortable list will replicate this. It is what it is. So you can like whine about it, or you can try and do your best.
Yeah.
In my experience.
It's still rough, you know, to realize that. That's why Patreon, I think, is such a good tool. Is a double-edged sword, as we talked about earlier, because it puts constraints on you. I have to put out 10,000 words a week. Mm-hmm. And I try to be very consistent with that because it is my job and people are paying me for it. They're paying me very well for it. But it's still a thing. I have to, like, unless I want to take a break, which I don't like doing because people are paying me for content, and like I want people to get what they're paying for. I need to put out something, and it can turn into a bit of a like a hamster wheel. And it's hard, but it is also an incredibly valuable toolbox because it let me do this full time. So like it's you gotta knowingly swallow the poison pill sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, like the. Like it's not even a poison pill sometimes. Like I mean,
true.
I've been talking to you for about an hour now, and I already know that you really like what you're doing, otherwise you wouldn't be doing it. You don't seem to be the kind of person who like desperately clings onto something even though it doesn't work for them.
We'll see about that next novel if that's a flop, and we'll see about the clinging to
but in the end, like, even if it does, that's not a problem.
Is that better? Right? Sorry.
No, that's fine.
No, it's like kind of blowing me out.
Like, even if it does, it's not a problem. Like, you will survive, right? So, like, it's.
Yeah.
I mean, whenever I'm talking to, like, the really big authors, and they're like, oh, especially serialists, what if my next novel isn't hitting so hard?
And oh, that's a problem all of us have. I've talked to everybody,
I know one dude who doesn't.
Same. I know Puddles. One person, which might be the same.
Puddles?
Okay. That's not the same person, but it's funny because it's adjacent to that person. So, I get why he doesn't care. First to Fire is the one who I understand like doesn't care. He, if anybody's seen his Patreon rant, like he's happy doing what he's doing, and he's in a good place, and he's content with that. And that's an enviable mindset to be in because I am. Maybe once my house is paid off, I'll be more comfortable with being like, if it flops, it flops. But like, whew.
It's
hard.
I stress about it. Something about money, right? Because
that said, I also don't intend. I know where the end of Path of Ascension is going to be, and I maybe I'll, like, at worst, an arc or two will be added. But, like, I'm, like, 60% done. Like, another 2 years, I'll be done. Like, I'm not going to turn it into an endless, you know, 30,000-chapter novel that can't end because the author is, he doesn't want to lose his revenue stream.
I think, though, rough. That's, I think, though, it's fine. Because, I mean, looking at your trajectory, right? I mean, looking at your Graphtreon, if you really keep going this way, at the end of, like, let me just see actually here, at the end of 2 years, so right now you've been growing, about Jesus Christ, you doubled in a year.
I've been incredibly lucky. But that said, yeah. I think I've almost tapped out Patreon as a revenue source.
Maybe.
I think I seem to have hit a cap a couple times of like 30k a month ish. Like, it might not reflect it on there because that doesn't track the like incoming payments that cancel immediately.
Yeah.
But I think I've kind of capped out on that. But it's still more than I could divide by two. Knock on wood. But it could divide by two and not financially hurt me. Because that is just after a certain amount of money. That's just a lot of money.
Yes, exactly. And like reaching that point is like very, very crucial. And I kind of wish everyone could do it.
Right? Same. It's at least with the lit RPG space, it is. I don't believe it is at this point. We're not the romance novel section where you have to like murder some other author to like take their spot because there's only so many eyes to read your book, and it's to get into the space, you have to shove somebody else out basically. The lit RPG stuff isn't that cutthroat yet, and I try to give people shout outs all the time because I've said it before. If you could put up your book in front of every single person in the world with like, you know, insert translation magic here, you would find a sustainable audience no matter what it is and how niche it is. You would find enough people to like your stuff to write. It's just getting to those people. Like, mass market appeal is huge because you need to be able to break into the market to a degree. You have a lot of people who love Taylor Swift, but then you have a lot of people who don't love Taylor Swift who will happily listen to Taylor Swift because it's, you know, easily digestible. But if you go into some, you know, super niche heavy metal, Eskimo singing throat, Mongolian singing thing, you're going to find
Nothing against the Who, okay? They're great.
They are great. That's exactly why I went to them. I was thinking of Eskimo. There used to be called Eskimo Cowboy, Electric Cowboy now.
Electric Cowboy.
They're great. They're so fun.
They're completely blowing your mind every single time.
The recent thing with Baby Metal was hilarious.
Oh my god, yeah.
I hated that song. This is a great thing about mediums, because like I listened to it on Spotify and I hated that song. I was like, this is stupid. Like, I did not enjoy this. And I was like, why did they make this? But I went to the YouTube video and I was like, oh my god, it clicked. Like, they were having so much fun doing that that I enjoy. It turned the song around for me. It's like one of my favorite songs from them now.
Baby Metal, especially, like
that's crazy.
Did you see them hanging out with like Rob Zombie?
Yes, that was. Yeah, and he was like, they're harder rockers than like 80% of people he's toured with. That is so cool.
Yeah,
it's like that's.
It's insane. How did we get here?
I don't. Tangents. We talked about it earlier. Tangents. They'll get you.
Sorry. Is there a comic coming? Can you say?
Oh yeah, I can say that now. There is a comic coming. It is amazing. I'm glad. I will say this. I'm glad I did the comic with the publisher Athon.
Yes,
because they are paying for it to be created. It's an Italian team who I think they're doing three others. Don't quote me on that. I believe it's four total, but it might be more. They're doing the art for that. I have a team with them, and they're I believe all Italian. So there's a bit of a language barrier. I'm not Italian, very American. I barely speak English, let alone Italian. They are thankfully much more smart than me. They're much gooder.
Do this and they will understand you according to Family Guy? To Family Guy?
Exactly. But they're great. And like they actually take feedback. And like I see a chapter in line art. I see a chapter in the script. I can review the script and I can get feedback. I can see a chapter in the line art. I can see the chapter in full color. And then I can see the chapter when it's lettered. And then, like, that's four opportunities for me to catch things that are wrong. I was yelled at by the publisher. I can freely admit this because I was being a little too like, hey, this isn't right. And the publisher is right to a degree that this is an adaptation and some things just need to change. Like, I get that. But they're, I'm glad that they're not doing it like directly through Webtoons, because I've seen some of the Webtoon originals and they are vastly different than the source material in ways that are not good. And I, at that, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just weird, but like, you see movies, you look at the Aragons, the Percy Jacksons, that are just absolutely terrible movie adaptations of the source material. And then they inevitably flop because the main draw, the readers are not, or the main fans, the core fans are not interested. And the casual fans who aren't otherwise interested in the IP
don't get it,
don't care. And they just, it's, it's a mediocre movie. I'd rather have a good adaptation than a, like, and like, you know, give it its chance rather than just take the money.
Yeah.
Because Webtoons is questionable with some of the stuff they change in other novels.
I know for a fact that when your webcomic drops, your patrons of service will go up, and also with your sales.
That, so I'm hoping I'm hoping I do the typical, or not typical, but like the magical webtoon to anime. That would be the dream. I would love an anime.
Yeah,
that, I know that's the dream for like half of the authors, but like,
I know for a fact that there are some people who are really trying to get it done.
I've talked to
some people who are like
trying,
very, very close. Very, very close.
I'm hoping they do it, and then that way it makes it easier for me to get it.
Yeah, Will's thing got done.
Right? Yeah, which is crazy. So.
Yeah, with Tiger Animation. Yeah, that's going to look really, really cool. But like,
look absolutely amazing. There's also shit coming. It's him. Like, I'm just hoping that these other, like, you know, the pioneers of the path will kick the door open, and then other studios and such will see there's money in the space with already done IPs. And then I'm hoping that, like, you know, I can be big enough that I am, like, looked at favorably, and they can, like, maybe that guy. Because I've said it before, like, if Amazon came to me right now and was like, we'll give you a 0% cut if we make an anime, I would take that deal in a heartbeat. So, like, I'm making enough money. Like, I don't need the money per se. Like, more money is always good, but like, I don't need endless money. But having an anime, like, being able to like go on to like a TV platform and pop up your own show, that would be the biggest ego boost of all
time. And I mean, like, Rhett and Steve at Aethon, like, for sure, they've also looked into this.
Oh,
like,
I've talked to them about it. Yeah. It's just hard, and it's expensive.
It is.
Apparently,
very expensive.
I would say this.
It's seven figures easy.
Yeah, easy. Animes are expensive, and like,
yeah, you have to draw 24 pictures.
I was like, initially, like, I'm like, that's stupid. Why would an anime cost that much? But then you think about it, you're paying like five or six artists or more, and then animators to like a lot of effort and time to make a show. Yeah. And I think people see, oh, it's just a cartoon, it's silly, it doesn't, you know, it's not that much effort. It is a ton of work, and that you just don't always think about it, because like, you can get it so easily, especially if you're pirating content for anime, which is just still difficult not to do if you're trying to watch something. It's like, oh well, I didn't pay for it, so your perceived value goes down when you should be paying, like, you know, almost $60 for a season sometimes.
It
doesn't feel like it costs much, so obviously it's easy to make because I got it for free.
If like, you're like, forget that, or like, for like, you know, like, it's on Netflix, and like,
yeah, it, I paid $10,
you always forget your Netflix
season.
But like, just knowing from like Will's thing, right, that like 1 million wasn't
Which
even half
crazy.
The,
yeah no that half.
And like for Vox Machina, I think the numbers are kind of public, so I can talk about it, because like I'm an agent, I've been, you know, doing this all the time, so like the Vox Machina thing, like, they got a really, really good deal from Amazon. Like, I'm not gonna say the numbers in case I can't.
Yeah.
Because like they've raised $2 million, and they got a really, really good deal from Amazon that enabled them to basically keep that money. That's all I can say about it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would believe that $2 million wouldn't even be enough to finish that, to be honest. I've heard, this is. Obviously, not, it's an Amazon Prime original, but I heard that Invincible was like multi-million for the first season to do.
Will Wright's thing is going to be multi-million for the first season.
Yeah, oh, I believe that. Mm. But like, that's just crazy when you think about it. Like, it's millions of dollars, and I don't think about that when I like watch Invincible. I'm not like, millions of dollars went into this.
There's only one issue with it. Apparently, and people don't know about it, but not many people know about it, but you can look this up. This is not like internet conspiracy bullshit. This is actually like documented. Apparently, what happened, what allegedly happened was that for Invincible and some other comics, they tried to get people in China, but then Chinese companies, without knowing it, probably like outsourced it to North Korea. So,
yeah, that's
that was a bit of oof. It came out because someone who's like crawling the server, the IP addresses that are like assigned to North Korea, he's crawling them, and he just got access to the server because there was like no password on it, and he found like all sorts of like design documents for Invincible on it, and like a bunch of other animations too. And he's like,
that's crazy.
Ooh, either it was stolen, not a great or look. Like, again, like it's not like anyone was like, hey, it's outsourced.
Let's go to North Korea, man. Like, I hear they got some cheap labor, some animators.
Yeah,
like,
like,
that's the problem with outsourcing. It's
it's
I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like inherently, because like you can argue that like, oh, it's giving jobs, like hopefully better paying jobs than they can normally get to like like a country that, you know, like isn't going to make it. Like China, for example, the animators might be making 10 cents a dollar because a US company is going to pay them nothing, but like they would only be making 5 cents if they're working for another Chinese company. It's like, oh, well, they're making double the money, clearly it's good. But like, yeah, but like you're clearly taking advantage of a wealth gap here and like leveraging a superior position to pay less than what the art would be worth in the States. Like, art is hard.
How dare you say this? The shareholders deserve the next diamond.
True. Yeah, they need another yacht. And like, that's annoying.
They don't have the yacht in Barbados yet.
Exactly. They can't. Yachts don't move. They're stationary, and like they fly to their yachts. Obviously. Like,
yeah.
That's what a yacht is.
It's like we were talking earlier about like the whole like money thing, right? And like I'm not at this place yet. I still have like a regular day job. I'm still doing my regular day job, and I very much enjoy it. It's fine. Getting to the point where you are like financially stable and independent is such a big game changer, because before I started this job, I was in German unemployment money for half a year because I got let go from my last job because of like financial crises, and that was like probably the most productive time I've ever spent in my entire life.
I wrote.
Awesome.
It's funny you mentioned that, though, being a full-time author. I want to say it was the YouTuber Pirate Software who mentioned this, but it might not have been him. He was talking about how like once you go from a hobbyist to a day job, like becomes your day job, you lose some of that drive. I don't know if it was Pirate Software, but it was somebody. But like basically saying it wasn't him. It was a YouTube RuneScaper called Jimmy. Mm-hmm. He does RuneScape YouTube content. And he was talking about how like he had a long ongoing series, the longest one RuneScape has had, millions and millions of views, turned it into a full-time job off this one series. And he was talking about how like once you go from a full-time job, like, and you're working on the side, like when you get home from your job, you're eager. And like you get home and you're like, I'm ready to write. Like, I was thinking about this all day. I just want to sit down and write. Like I want to do it. Like it's the hobby and like you're energetic. When it becomes your job, you kind of lose a little bit of that magic, and it's literally a job now. You have to have discipline to like sit down and write rather than just like you want to write. It changes. Like
it loses
the magic.
I already have to do that, right? But I write because I know it's good for me. It's like it's like going to the gym, because I know once I'm in the zone, I'm writing, it's relaxing, and I'm creating something, and it's great. So I always have to force myself already. But you got to force yourself to do most stuff that's good.
Yeah. Right.
So, I've never, like, there are moments where I'm like, oh, okay, I can't wait to write this or that or this or this, right? Cool. But, like there's also sometimes where I'm like, oh, I'm just itching to write, but that's mostly after I've written. And when I'm like talking to someone about what I've written, I'm like, actually hold that thought. I want to write for like 3 more hours. And then like one of my partners is like, Are you fucking kidding me right now? We're having a date. I'm like, yeah, but...
Yeah, but, like, I had a great idea. And like
pop up a notebook because I write, jot something down. Just...
One second, hold on. Let me crank this out real quick.
And then he punches him in the face.
I use Discord for that. I'll PM my beta chat, and I'll just, like, idea. And, like, if somebody, like, thought, I'll type. And, like, that's, like, my keyword, so I know, like, I can control F it later. And I'll just throw, like, random ideas, and then I'll come back, and, like, the patrons have torn it apart, and I'm like, okay, it was a bad idea, but on to the next one. Sometimes, like, brains are weird, and, like, that's why I, like, personally, when I write, I have internal backlogs. Like, I'll write something, and then a week and a half, 2 weeks later, it'll go to Patreon, and then it takes another month to go to Royal Road. But that week and a half, 2 weeks lets me just think about the chapter. Usually the day before the chapter goes out, I'm editing it heavily because, like, it's fresh in my mind again, and I am no longer seeing what I thought I wrote. I'm seeing what I actually wrote most of the time, because that happens a lot, and I'll be like, well, I clearly wrote that. It's like, no, you didn't, dude. You wrote something completely different because you missed, like, three words. And it's like, oh, no. Okay. Like, that internal time to let it percolate is very useful.
Yeah. And also, like, it's very good to make you forget what you've written already, and so, like, you kind of tread the same needle twice. I need better readers so hard. Anyway, and this is the second question of the podcast now.
20 minutes in.
20 minutes, like, no, like, 30 minutes in.
All right, I was rounding down. I was being generous.
This has to be very accurate. There are rules.
I'm sorry to your editor. I apologize.
Oh, no, my editor is fine. Like, we're not going to edit this down. We're going to cut it up.
And
we're
gonna, that's fair. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's
episodes.
Fine. No. Well, two episodes, it's like Shortloon levels, because Shortloon and I, we can talk for, like, days.
Nice, yeah.
I'm getting the same feeling from you, so...
Yeah, I will happily talk. It's fun.
It is fun. And here's one thing, because we need to ask this question. What's the best advice you've ever gotten as a writer?
There's so much. There's literally so much. The one that comes to mind initially is kill your babies, and if you can't kill them, get a beta reader who will. I have a one.
Isn't
beta
it called kill your darlings?
Yeah, I like to call it babies. It's more personable.
Okay, but it is the same advice, right?
Yeah, it's same advice.
Okay, like, good.
Just because it's a great idea, just because it's a great idea, doesn't mean it always works. And it's like I literally have a beta reader who is. Dataless, he's a good friend, he lives only a couple hours away from me now, so we've hung out in person, which is super awesome, but, like, he is perfectly willing to take, like, a good idea I had and I'm so proud of and just murder it. And I'm sorry, my cat is playing in the window.
I saw it blind.
But yeah, like, you sometimes have to, like, good ideas are sometimes good, but they're not good for the story. My second big advice as an author is consistency, at least on the monetary side. Patreon is if you go through the Patreon aspect, is a job. Treat it like one. I have a chapter that comes out at the exact same time, sans me making a mistake on Patreon, because I've done that before. Whoops. Mess up a date, and then, like, hey, it's 3:00. Why isn't the chapter out? Oh, no, panic. Let me go on my phone, because I'm not at my computer, and upload it real quick, because I clearly messed something up. But, like... consistency is king. You will. Some of my best growth was after I had a big fluff up with a chapter and people, like, hated it, and I saw, like, massive downturn in, like, new readers and such. But, like, I got all of that back and more just by, like, being consistent with chapters. Every Monday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a chapter comes out. And unless it's, you know, I'm taking a break and I give people at least 2 weeks notice on breaks, and it's not. Like, you see some novels where it's like, chapter's gonna come out sometime in the next week, and I don't, like, that can work for people, but, like, consistency is king. That's you need to write, or not write, but you need to put it out, like, at the same time, whether that's once a month and you want to put out one chapter a month. I think that would be perfectly viable. The Mother of Learning way, with, like, one massive chapter once a month, as long as it's at the same time every month. You just need consistency. That would be my biggest, like, author, like, money making tip.
And also, I mean,
also beg shout outs.
What?
Beg for shout outs. most authors are usually happy to give a shout out. I'm always happy to give a shout out. Anybody can reach out to me through PMs on Discord, because, like, eyes on it are important. And sometimes you just need that initial boost to get through the algorithm.
I'll take you up on that once I've rewritten the story for the
fourth time. Yeah, no, definitely. I love to do Amazon and Royal Road shout-outs. They're It takes 10 seconds of my time, but it's very helpful for everybody.
I mean, if anyone's listening to this, they've probably found this podcast through a shout out on your, on your chapter, probably. So cool. Dope. That being said, this was a short and sweet. I like that. The next one.
We didn't hit a tangent. Congratulations to us.
The next one is, if you could go back and change something in your writing, what would it be? Or if you've learned, like, what have you learned in your writing that you would do differently for the next story?
Oh, God, so many things. So I'm a reader first. Like, I've been reading since I was, I don't know, 10, 12 years old. I was stealing audiobooks off of shady torrents back in 20s, like the aughts, because I didn't have money, and like I was reading faster than I went to the library. So like I had a little iPod classic, and I was throwing audiobooks on there as I did yard work at like my house, because I just wanted to read, and I like that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to read. And like I like if I played video games, sure, but like if I had some free time, like I would probably have a book in hand. I remember listening to Aragon on a CD player.
Oh man.
And like I was listening with I was cutting the grass on like a lawnmower, because we had a big yard. It took like hours to cut the grass. But like I was dump, and there's like skips because I'm bouncing on the mower with like trying to turn up the headphones like as loud as possible so I can hear the book, because I'm trying to read and I want to read. Like that's my thing. I'm a reader first, an author second.
I gotta get that not Walkman. What was the CD version of it?
Yes. Walkman was the cassette.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you the name. Like, I can't think of it.
The anti-shock one that was like revolutionary.
That was so... I never had one of those, but I sure wish I did. I actually skipped that and just went straight to an iPod classic. Because I just listened to audiobooks. Like, if I could find that audio, I would love to find that iPod. I'm sure it's in a landfill somewhere or sold somewhere else. But I had so many good books on there of like stuff I'd read. I'd stolen because I was a kid. And like that's why I don't mind when, Amazon, don't listen to this. When pirates like take my stuff and they'll upload it, and I'll be like, yeah, you got to take it down, you know, send it to the publisher, they'll send DCMA. But like personally, I don't care, because as a kid, I did the same thing. Like I couldn't afford it and I still wanted to read, so I did it. I always buy my books now because I have the position I can without worrying about it. So I'll buy dozens of books a month.
Yeah. That's so
but
free.
I'm a
yeah.
reader first, and like I hate certain things. Like there are tropes that I'll go, ugh. Man, it's so stupid. Like one trope I hit and I regret it immensely is you never see characters with the same name. And I'm like, that's so unrealistic. Like first name is Chris. I don't really know people knowing that. That's where the C in C Mantis comes from. I had four people named Chris in my elementary school, and we all sat at the same table, and it was Chris, which one? And everybody would turn their head. And like I literally was like best friends with those kids in elementary school, because we were all named Chris and we had the same name, and that was like all you needed. So like part of my one character interaction was I had my main character literally bump into somebody whose name was also Matt. Yeah. And I was like, this is such a good character interaction. It was good characterization. It was just show that they're real people. And like, you know what I mean? Like, he made a new friend just because of that. And it was like a good friend. And then you realize that's an awful idea and you should never do it, because now you have two characters named Matt and you have to try to differentiate them in dialogue. And then so you're like, my answer was the wrong one. First I said Matt with two T's, we'll have Matt with one T. Genius. Oh, yes.
Your audiobook narrators will love you.
And yeah. And then I was like, somebody rightly pointed out before the book went to narrator, thankfully, you can't hear the difference between Matt with one T and Matt with two T's. Works great for book, not for audio. Ruh-roh Shaggy, and I ended up settling on Matt and Matthew, because that's a little bit easier.
And have another one called Math Me.
Math is bad. I have an emoji for that. It's a little Math is bad. It's Aster with a calculator dropping on her head, giving her a concussion. It's a great little emoji. Math is bad. We'll get on that tangent, but like I did that as an author, and I regret it immensely. Second one I regret is. You read novels and it's like, oh my God, okay, the first woman who is introduced with a name and a physical description, well, she's the love interest. And as a reader, I hate that. And it's like, it's true, but as a writer, I'm like, oh my God, like I wasn't going to introduce my main character, like my main love interest, until book three. And then book one is like ending, and I'm like, oh my god, I need to introduce her. And then I ended up merging the character with another character that had already existed on screen into like a you know, more rounded out character eventually. But like originally, the main love interest wasn't meant to be the Liz we know. It was meant to be a different person who became like a lot of the characteristics are shared, but like they weren't supposed to be introduced till book three. But I was like, oh my god, I need to get this person on screen because like I need the readers to like them. So like I get why authors now have the first, you know, female character that has a name and a physical description be the love interest, because they want the readers to they want them to duckling bond with them. They see Papa and then they see Mama, and that's it. That's all you're getting.
Shout out
like, as a writer, I'm like, oh my god, I get it now. Like, I'm so sorry for being mad at all you other authors. And the third
shout outs to Quest Academy.
Yes.
Right, Brian, like he wrote very ruthlessly. He was like, no, you know what? I can't even do his voice. He just has like this voice that sounds like someone's like gargled espresso and brandy and then made out with your ears. And he just has the main character have like a one-night stand with someone in like the first couple of chapters. And
that's what I did.
People asking like, is this harem? And like he's been getting this question like the entire time. And he it's not on Amazon yet, but if you're on his Patreon, you know that like the real love interest isn't revealed until book three.
I was trying to do that, and I chickened out. Because like I did that. I had my main character have a girlfriend who just some people didn't like how I did it. Some people really did. I basically had a time skip of like 6 months to a year and just gave him a girlfriend in the meantime because he was living life in the meantime. But we as the reader didn't really need to see him just grind out dungeons and levels and stuff. Like it, we just didn't need to see it. So like people were like, oh my god, why is she being introduced? Because I'm intentionally going to remove her in like two chapters because she's not that important. It just shows that the main character isn't a weirdo who only kills things for a living. And
I
people
like that.
Some people hated that. Like they were like, this is terrible writing, and like it's so bad. And other people understood what I was going for, which is clearly an issue on me. If I had written it better, obviously you can't please everybody, but if I'd written it better, probably it would have been better. I didn't know what I was doing at the time. I could see a few minor things I could tweak to like slide it in better. But yeah, like I didn't want the main character to fall in love with the first woman described. So I had multiple women who are deliberately fully described and fleshed out who aren't the love interest just because of that. But it's a problem. Like I wouldn't change that one. But the third one, and probably the biggest, is I gave the main character way too much cool stuff in the early game that like I had to like severely like pull back on the yoke to like rein in power levels stuff, because it was just getting out of hand. And I say that as an author reader who hates when the main character just goes from like, you know, lucky one in a million event to lucky one in a million event. And I fell into it so easily.
But it's fun to write. Like I made the opposite mistake.
No, it is.
In the first draft of Torchbearer, it's like Sam basically ends the first book with a weapon and like armor and the ability to like summon some friends sometimes, maybe never again. Right, that's all she has, and like, so they didn't really do the power fantasy super well. Pardon for the knock on the mic, but like, I can definitely also see how the other option is like super enticing. Like, you want to give your main character like more and more cool shit because you can't wait to get
stuff.
The cool shit. Yeah.
And the funny thing is that I say that as there's a word for it, and I cannot think of it. Like, My power of scaling is yes to it. Like, I don't mind people going off the rails and like just insanely incredibly powerful. I don't think the main character should be the only one to be able to do special things. It's one of like my core philosophies is like, I treat Path of Ascension, you become an ascender once you finish it, is like the ascenders are all main characters of their own books in their own way. And like a trope for them is like they're never declared dead because they just have a habit of coming back to life. Because they're main characters. That's a main character, you know, trope. Like one of them we based off of Selkie's main character was Ascender Dawn, you know, nod to that novel. And she came back after like 10,000 years because it was a nod to that. But like, I just built that into the world of like, you can have stupidly overpowered stuff. But even then, there is a limit of like where you can't give your main character literally everything. And I had to like pull back kind of hard. And people have commented like between book one and book two, you notice that like we're really like book one and book three. Book two is when I started getting beta readers. But like by book three, like I had pulled back quite a bit. And like it's a little noticeable. Most people enjoy it, but like I was giving Matt way too much stuff that he should never have had access to. That's so cool. I want to do it.
Book two ended on the island with like a lot of cool, a lot of free time and like unlimited mana and like a bunch of like fucking portals.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like, oh, okay. So like,
yeah, and it was like that was actually deliberate. That was us pulling it back a little bit. Funnily enough, it was just like
What was the other option?
Oh, it was going to be so much worse because I just like. I thought of some, I would think of something cool, like book one with the dragon, the rare dragon, the heart blood. That should not exist. It breaks so many world building rules that like I've established and I established before.
What did I do again? I read it last year, like almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah, no, it like basically it's just like it's too high level, basically. Mm-hmm. Like TLDR, it shouldn't exist, and it. I didn't want to remove it because I hate retcons. Like I said in our earlier hour conversation, I hate retcons. I don't want to do them, but it was so integral to like setting up plot between Matt and Liz, the two main characters, that I couldn't remove it even if I wanted to. But like I had to like live with that like hugely important decision that is just making issues anytime it's brought up because it breaks so many world building things. But it was just because I was like, oh, this is cool. And like, this is just cool. And I want to do it. And that was past me as kind of not a good person. He's only giving me problems.
Yeah. I kind of like, I really want to talk to you about like, if you have any ideas for like your next series already, but.
Oh yeah, I know exactly what it's going to be.
Oh my God. We'll talk this in the bonus material.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, next Patreon series hook. is planned, or I have like rough outlines and stuff, like just general ideas jotted down on a notepad kind of thing. But I have a pretty good idea of what it's going to be, and I that's part of the reason why I know where the ending of Path of Ascension is, because I have like three novels I'm currently thinking about writing. One of them, I will say this, it is a romance novel. I want to write it under a pen name just to see if I can am I a good writer? I don't know. Like, because like
you want to try that in romance.
So like, if I could write a romance novel under a pen name and get it at least mildly popular, like then I know I'm a decent, half decent writer. So like, romance, I have a romance eventually because it's such hard. It's so hard to break into.
Romance is so formulaic. To follow the formula 100%.
And that's remember, I don't want to do that. So we'll see if it works out.
No, it won't.
Like, yeah. Well, actually, I don't. You know what? I don't want to break. I'll shut the fuck up entirely.
You do it
fair, and then we'll come back and see
if you can do it. I will fly over and I'm gonna bring you a cake because like I would love that. I would love to be able to write romance, but just hate the formulaic stuff.
Yeah, so my problem with romance is the third act in romance, the breakup and subsequent get back together stupid thing. That is the only rule, like the third, like that's the one I want to break. I don't mind a lot of the romance tropes, but like it's that third. Oh, there's the main character saw him kissing somebody else, you know, through a window that's foggy, that's with snow on it. It's actually he pecked his sister on the cheek, but they're gonna break up because of that kind of thing. I hate that so much, and that's the one trope I will not write because I just don't want to write it. But like, I actually like a lot of the other romance tropes, but yeah, romance is a three set piece, and it's hard. That's why I kind of want to write something in it. I can't say what it is. I can't say anything about it because I want to put it out there and I want to have it live or die on its own. But yeah, that is a novel I want to do. Okay. Am I a good writer? We'll find out.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think you're decent.
That is like we mentioned it earlier, like talking to other big authors who got big off their first thing. I didn't like you talked to us seemingly a lot of authors who have started with forms, writing on forms or writing fan fiction. I had never written more than 5,000 words before Path of Ascension. I want to make that very clear. I'd never written a single thing. There is a
document. You went into it with ardor. You went into it with like lots of like you went into it with intent.
Yeah, and I like because my thing was like I wanted to write 50,000 words over winter break, and that's what I did. And then I published those 50,000 words, and that's how I got here. But like, I didn't write. Like, I have one other novel idea that's like very much on the back burner because it's bad. that like I emailed to myself at one point. It's like 1,000 words of a document of like the first chapter, and it's very bad and it's really cringy to read, but I keep that in mind because like I had other ideas, but I never wrote anything. Like this is my first thing, so like my next series might be Dog Water and nobody wants to read it, and I sure hope not, because like that would be a really bad ego blow. But like most other authors who succeeded on their first try, I'm not going to name names, but like they have said, or at least told me, that they feel the same way, and like they're very scared that their next series is going to flop.
It's just one more step of like imposter syndrome. I mean, anyone with like a shred of empathy will understand why. I mean, like, God, look even at like Patrick Rothfuss. Like, I know people are memeing on him for like not finishing the book, but can you imagine that?
His pressure must be incredible, and not in a good way. The only thing I will say about him is he said multiple times he has book three written. Yeah. Like, oh, I just want book three. Yeah. Man.
But like that's the thing, right? So I mean, I've certainly been there where I've like, hey, is this even good enough to put out? So
I get it. I 100% get why he does it.
I started,
if he's not happy with it, and that's one thing I would say, even if like, as much as I hate to say it as a reader, if you're not happy with it, don't put it out. It's much easier to, it's hard to take it back.
Yeah.
I actually saw, speaking of the opposite of that, I actually saw an Amazon novel do that. Book three, it was like some kind of like Climb the Tower novel. I can't remember exactly what it was. You know, all the people on Earth get teleported into, you know, lit RPG towers thing and clear floors to find new races, and you finish the tower to save humanity kind of thing. And book three just wasn't very good, apparently. And the author like pulled it down and rewrote it because he was able to. But like book three original is still out there. Book 3.2, I don't know what to call it, 0.5, the second version of it, is apparently very good. Actually, I haven't caught up because he hasn't put the audiobook out yet. I'm an Audible reader. But like that is one thing, it's possible, but it's very hard. Like once it's out there, it's kind of out there. Like,
I mean, like, look, like, I mean, like, you don't know, you probably don't know this because it's kind of like a smaller story, right? But I released Torchbearer 1, like the very first version, and had like 200 followers. I rewrote it and had 1,400, right? And then I rewrote it again. And this time I didn't hit Rising Stars, so I'm only at like 800 something something right now, which is still very much fine with me, right? I had a moment where I was like, oh shit, I only have like how I have less, like, doesn't fucking matter. I have like people who love this thing and who like comment every time. I'm happy. But like rewriting used to be like an integral part of writing, right? Everyone from Neil Gaiman to Arthur Conan Doyle rewrote their book several times. Like, I'm not saying they went back and added a chapter. They
rewrote the
novel. Rewrote because, like, you had a typewriter and you couldn't copy and paste, right? You had to type this entire thing from the start, right? So that's how people have been doing it for the longest time. And to be quite honest, after having analyzed my own stuff, and it's a fucking Jenga tower. I take one part out, everything collapses. Yeah. You have to rewrite from scratch sometimes.
You have to kind of just live with it. That is one thing I would say about web novels. Like, it's a good and bad thing. Like, so like there are things that like I would like to change, like we talked about before, that I just I can't. Like, I would love to have, like, you know, written book one in its entirety and then seen what it landed on and then be able to edit things, but I can't, and I have to live with that. But yeah, like, what was it? Lord of the Rings was rewritten like 5 or 6 times, I believe. Like, I'm not a better writer than J.R.R. Tolkien. Like, I wouldn't claim that if you tortured me. Like, but if he's doing it, like, clearly there's a reason. And that's part of the creative process, I think, that we have kind of lost is a strong word, but like, it's kind of like fallen out. Like, people expect content.
Quality isn't all that important anymore.
No, I have a theory about that. There's a floor of quality that once you reach, there are incredible diminishing returns past that. If you are understandable to a, like, I don't know, a 10th grade English reading level kind of thing, maybe even like 8th middle school, once you're beyond that, it doesn't like, I don't write good. Like, I know words, but I don't put them together that well all the time. Like, I'm not an English teacher. My roommate's an English teacher. And I can't tell you. I legitimately cannot tell you how you're supposed to use a comma. Like, I don't know what a past participle is. I don't know.
Also, he's your comma chameleon?
No.
Get it? Because it's a song of, like, anyway, doesn't matter.
No, yeah. My roommate, I was like, oh, moving back home, because I was living not where I grew up, and he's one of my high school buddies, and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to be buying a house. You want to come live with me again? Because we lived together a couple years ago, and it was great. We would get along well, so, like, we're not going to murder each other. And he was, like, an English teacher, and I was like, yeah, dude, come live with me. It'll be fun. Have a roommate again. And, like, that's fun. But, like, I don't know how to do English. Like, I don't English good. Like, my spelling error thing in my Discord is literally I don't spell good.
Yeah, I saw that.
I don't. And I, like, once you hit that certain level of, like, basic understandability, which helps that I'm a native English speaker, I know what sounds wrong, even if I can't tell you why or what sounds right.
Yeah.
I can tell you what sounds wrong. And that like, once you hit that level, there are vast diminishing returns. Like, you just don't need to be, J.R. Tolkien to write a novel.
I can completely confirm that. Like, I think my strongest point in writing is my prose, because I love my prose. I love rearranging words. I love putting things together. But at some point, it just becomes, like, beautiful to look at, but there's, like, nothing really behind it. I'm not saying there's nothing behind Torchbearer, because I fucking love this book. But I have focused on the prose too much and sacrificed watching the plot, right? And yeah. So now I'm really struggling to, like, get that thing back in order, like the whole, like, pacing thing. For some reason, I used to be really good at this, and now, like, I lost that. I have no idea why. So
human brains aren't meant to focus on two things at once. We're just not. Yeah. So as you focus on prose, you lose, you know, you sacrifice other things, and then vice versa. It's very much that is one reason I like being a web novelist, and, like, I have Patreon to, like, keep me honest, because I would happily spend days editing single chapters, and I physically can't. I have a week and a half, 2 weeks that, like, that's all I've got. Like, it's got to go out. Like, it has to ship. And I, it keeps me honest, because otherwise I would do exactly that, and I would sit there and editing purgatory forever and endlessly looping.
You're 100% right on the, like, general standard of quality. I mean, like our community is built on the bones of people who literally, like, spend weeks snorting machine translated Janja. Like, this is,
I am,
like,
100% guilty of that. And yes, like, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just, like, progression fantasy and lit RPG enthusiasts, because as a community, we are probably, at least that I know, some of the most voracious readers imaginable. Like, this is the only community where it's like, oh, it's a million words? Sweet, that'll keep me going for a weekend. And it's like, I'm guilty of that. I use the worst machine translated, you know, Chinese web novels, and, like, I'll literally put them on speech to text on my phone and, like, a web reader, and I'll just listen to it as I do other things, because, like, I work at my computer all day. I don't want to be sitting at my computer. So like, if I'm at my computer, I'm working or I'm gaming, but otherwise I'm doing something else. And, like, I can't read while I'm doing something else with my hands. You know what I mean? I need my hands and my eyes to read. So, like, I've been using literal Google speech to text, like, robot voice to read novels for the last couple of years. And, like, I'm like, oh, there's, like, a 600 chapter, like, multi-million word novel that was machines translated and is very bad. Yes, that's perfect. I've got a full week of reading. And it's just like, most other places, they're like, oh, I got a trilogy. That's going to last me, like, a month. And, like, a trilogy of, like, 300,000 words, that's, like, a day's reading, my guy. Like, oh, yeah, our community is very... quantity is a quality all its own after a point.
Yeah.
Because people just want to read.
I wish sometimes it wasn't, because it's not the kind of writer that I am. But
it's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, like, to be honest...
There's some writers, you ever seen Pirate Abba? Author of Wandering In, they live stream their writing, and I used to make the joke that they were a AI. It's not funny now that there's actual writing AI, like, they write so quickly, it is absurd. I mean, as an author, to, like, watch them do that and just be like,
they're literally one of our clients. So
nice, like, it's they're insane. Like,
you know how they do it.
They killed the space. Like, they started it. Raised it and then butchered the space with, like, web novels, like the OG of OGs. And
Worm, without them, Worm and Practical Guide to Evil,
Yeah, and it's also funny because I've read none of those, all three of them.
Practical Gotcha Evil, can fully recommend. Also,
one of my beta readers is loves that. It's his favorite novel, which I'm always like, oh, but why isn't my novel your favorite novel? It's like a comedic thing, but yeah, I've tried Wandering In. I've tried 4 or 5 times to get into it, and I never get past chapter 1. It's very funny.
It's they rewrote their beginning because they didn't have enough to do, so they rewrote the beginning. And they're
that's so crazy. They write book, so quickly that they can. Oh, I'm just going to rewrite book one.
They're
oh,
book.
God.
Don't let me lie. They're at book 43 now.
That's
so.
I'm on book 11.
14.6 like, million words.
Yeah, that's it's crazy. The
put that.
They're a machine, thing. Man. Like, see, that's why the joke isn't funny anymore. But like, they did a live stream where they wrote like 20,000 words or something. Like,
you know how they do it?
That's not normal. Like,
you know how they
someone give me some of that.
They plot.
That's gross. Plotting's bad.
Like, yeah, they plot, and like the way they edit is they have people literally like their editors or the beta readers read as they write.
And yeah, that's so, another thing I can't do. Like, get out of my document when I'm working on it. Like, I give it to them and like. But if they try to edit where I'm like, if I can see them while I'm at, like trying to write or expand the thing, like, yeah, no, go away.
Yeah, it's gross. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do the error.
Sometimes like, it's okay, but like I've edited with like, because I let my beta readers have a lot of leeway, and they can like rewrite passages if they want. No, probably 8 times out of 10 accept it, and then like then change that to be more fitting to my own like style. Mm-hmm. But like I accept a lot of their stuff, but like. Editing while I'm writing is like, oh, that would. The movement of the Google Doc, I would like lose my mind. Pirate Abba is a monster.
Yeah, Abba is like pretty fucking peep. They recently toned it down. Now they only do, I think, like 80,000 words a week or something.
Only 80, yeah.
Yeah.
That's, it's, or like, it's, 180? So absurd. That's crazy.
Something like that. Like there was a time where they just like literally wrote like 150,000 words a week. I should take vacations now.
I'm doing 10,000 a week, and like when I finish a chapter, like I'll write a chapter, and because like, I'll do it in one sitting, as I said earlier. Yeah. But I'm brain dead like that, like most of the evening. Like I don't talk to me. I don't want to like. I want to just go like either play a game, watch some really dumb TV show that I don't have to think about, or like listen to an audiobook I've already listened to, so I don't have to think about it. I can't process like my I would be actually a zombie if I wrote more than like 15,000 words a week.
They started at 2,600 words a week.
Yeah, right? That's
I think it's probably public knowledge. Like they worked at like some sort of, like big chain, and they quit as soon as they could, and then they started like their machine. They do nothing else.
Yeah, that it's actual like good for them. But I can't imagine it. Like, it's some people are just built different, and you don't have to be like, as anybody listening, you don't have to be that kind of voracious author to be successful. You can be 10,000 words a week and be fine.
That being said, because we're already kind of in that tangent, did you love and why is it awesome?
Say that again. I'm sorry.
What's one book that you love and why is it awesome?
Oh, that's a. That's a question of what have I read recently. But if I have to pick one book that is like my probably favorite book of all time, it's going to be The Martian. Specifically the audiobook. I'm an audiobook fiend. I listen to 80% of the things I read. But the audiobook by, I want to say...
I'm going to look it up.
I can't think of his name. The Martian audio.
I got it. Will Wheaton.
No, not him. The other one, the older one. R.C. Bray, the original version, which was done originally because it's the original. He did a narration. The rights expired after 5-10 years, whatever it was, and R.C. Bray was brought on to do the second one. He did a fine job, don't get me wrong. But like the R.C. Bray was so good. It's kind of like my junk food novel. If I really don't have anything else to throw on, I can always throw that on and listen through The Martian. I love The Martian. I love sci-fi in general, but sci-fi is one, a smaller genre. It's very hard to write in. I legitimately, fantasy is easy. You can make up all the rules. Like, if I don't want fire to be hot, I can make fire not hot, and it can work. Sci-fi is so much harder it is absolutely astonishing that some people write in that genre, and I wish them all the best of luck, because I would love to read all of it, especially hard sci-fi. It's also something I'm a sucker for. I love my hard sci-fi, but it's so difficult. And that's why I just love The Martian. It's not super sci-fi, but like it's a little sci-fi. But space is fun. Like, I don't know. I love science and space. It's just, you got to be smart to write that stuff, and that isn't me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like, the hard sci-fi, I couldn't do. I think hard sci-fi is something for like John Pierce, who like meticulously researches a crap ton of stuff. Like his new book, it's not out yet, so I can't talk anything about it. But there's like a certain weapon in it, and he literally like went down and like talked to like bunch of like martial artists and designed a real combat style for this like unique weapon.
God, and see, that's like, so cool.
John, what the fuck are you doing? Because like he's a scientist at heart. He's just
that, yeah. Great. See, that's not me. Like I have beta readers, and like one of them dropped the casual thing that they have a PhD. And I was like, bro, why are you so smart and why are you here? Like that's not
having
me.
A PhD doesn't mean you're smarter than anyone else.
I mean you're smarter.
It just
than
means
me.
You learn. You learned a lot, and you impress the
that's
right
fair.
People.
But that's just so difficult. So I have a buddy who's literally finishing his PhD right now. And it's he works so hard. And it's just like, oh, my God. And
so do you.
And then I'm over here like, I'm just going to – I don't know how this works. So I'm going to make it up. And it's my world. It's fantasy. I can do whatever I want.
That's also hard work. You just talked about how
– that's so much easier, though.
For
I make
you.
The rules. Yeah, for exactly. You. But for me, exactly. Yeah. I'm sure other people find, you know, things I find easy, very difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right.
To give a non
No.
Okay.
No. Time box.
Sorry, tangent. I was going to give another book rec, but this one's a smaller
one. Okay. All right. We can do that. Okay, yeah.
So this is a series that is near and dear to my heart as a series that has evolved off Royal Road. Mm-hmm. It's called World Keeper by Justin Miller. He's a Royal Road author. Much smaller. The first book is written like 12, 15 years ago, and you can kind of tell that he was a different author, a little bit more just younger, you get what I mean. The horniness came through sometimes with, you know, a lot of like harem trope and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But not gonna say he reined it in, but you can clearly tell he's evolved as an author and a person, and like a lot of the kind of weeby stuff isn't quite a nice description, but like, you know, cat girls, and it's very played up for laughs and stuff, has been like toned down. But he is on book like 12 right now on Amazon, and he's writing constantly, and he's just putting out stuff, and I love it. It's a very much a world building crack series. World Keeper, book one is Birth of a World by Justin Miller. Basically, it's a guy becomes a god, and then he has to design like the world, and he makes a fantasy world because he's a nerd like us. And then he gets to spend points that he earns from the world to like reinvest buy new magic systems or let the people discover it. And then he has to fight other worldly like gods like with his world and like send them to fight and stuff. And it's a great novel. It's a world building crack, and world building is what I love the most of being a writer and a reader. So I just really wanted to give out a shout out to a smaller author. As much as I love it, The Martian doesn't need I don't need a shout out of freaking Andy Weir. He doesn't know who I am, and that's understandable.
So, but how does he deal? Like, is he just like omnipresent and can just like see everything? Or
no, that's kind of the fun thing. So he is still a single human, like air quotes. Like he has a mind. He's slowly trained himself to be like a little bit more aware. He can spread his perception, kind of thing. You know, you see a lot. But he is still a singular entity. But he has like basically they call it the admin room. And he can go up there. Then it's basically like he can just computer sim and like zoom in and find somebody and press pause on the world and then like
zoom
find
and
details. Exactly. he can do that, or he can just like he can go into the world as a person and like experience it there and like live in the world, which he does quite a bit in the more recent novels, which is great.
But, like, I have an idea I need to talk to you about in the bonus stuff.
Yeah, no, it's fun. But like that is a great novel for like world building. I just want to shout out somebody smaller because I'm in a position where I can shout out people, and I hope it helps them.
Nice. Okay, so give me some other shout outs. Just like shout outs in general.
Okay, so we have first, this one doesn't need a shout out, but I'm going to do it anyway. You have The Stubborn Skill Grinder in a Time Loop. That's a great novel. I just
Rodin.
Yeah, that's a great flick. I've been reading it since like chapter like 4 or 5. I'm actually a little behind right now. No spoilers, but yeah, that's a fun novel. Anybody who hasn't read that and they need like a popcorn like power fantasy taken to 11, 10 out of 10 can recommend.
Yeah, it's so on the like it. You get what's on the tin, like
yeah, no, it's itself. Exactly. Yeah. Like you the story isn't trying to be super in depth or like you know some philosophical debate. It's just balls to the wall. Like we're gonna punch things. We're gonna do it even better next time, and it's great. Another one that I have been reading and very much enjoying is The Undying System by G. Trolley on Royal Road. I'm actually a Patreon of his because I enjoy it that much. It's a slower based cultivation novel, very heavily inspired by the Chinese originals. He takes great pains to make everything fit that cultural expectation and like the original lore of like Coiling Dragon. What's the other one I can't think of? But like he has the undying thing, and like there's a giant turtle, and I can't think of the name. The Reliance Sect is what it's called, and he like took great inspiration from that, and like he's been very meticulous about keeping a very tight like thing with the system, and like the main character can die and like loop back, so every time he dies, he starts back at 14, and he doesn't like that because he's not a psychopath, and the world is very brutal because cultivation. It's a cultivation novel taken seriously. When your main character isn't super powered, so he makes a mistake and he just dies, like, which is great with time loops because you can punish your main character for making a mistake without, you know, ending the novel, because that death usually implies the end for most novels. And let's do
shout
one
out to
more.
Fate Points.
Yeah, Fate Points is another good one. I need to reread Fate Points because he like edited the first couple chapters or something for their Amazon release, and I haven't reread that. So thank you. That's on my list now.
Yeah. And did you read the new one? Unbridled Fury?
Did he has a new one?
Yeah, it's... Have you finished Fate Points?
No, I have not.
Okay, then I'm not going to...
Okay, fair. I apparently, did it end? I didn't know it ended. I'm actually on his Patreon. I just didn't know it ended.
Keep reading?
Okay, fair. I'm a binge reader. If there's not like 100,000 words, it's not enough for me to like roll
over.
Oh,
there is.
I need like a juicy bit of thing. And the final shout-out I want to give is Monroe. By Jax, another longtime Royal Road author. Skip chapter one. It is not indicative of the author's beliefs or like the main character's beliefs. It is it is to show that there is a flawed narrator. But if you look at the reviews, like 3/4 of them are like the main character is a racist, you know, right wing nut, and he's a terrible person. And it's like he's not. It's very deliberate. It's just. Doesn't come over very well because you don't know the author and you don't know like the character as he is. Skip chapter one.
Like I'm just like completely distracted by the dog in your background. Like
yeah, she's playing. It's
destroying. She's everything.
Playing.
It's fine. So it's fine. Fine. Okay, no, but like what's it spelled?
Monroe. Monroe, and it's a great novel. It's a lit RPG. A man gets blasted into another universe. And then the system like scans his brain and is like, oh, there's another universe out there that doesn't have the system. And it's like, the system itself doesn't care, but basically the main character finds out that the system is going to integrate Earth eventually, which is going to be the apocalypse as like mana awakens. Because basically the system is a, basically to stop the expansion heat death of the universe. It like cycles, you know, mana energy back into itself in like a cycle. That stops the, you know, the expansion of the universe and like its goal. That's like the underlying goal of the system is to expand to every universe and stop the heat death of all of them. And it doing that awakens monsters because like the best way I found out was to move mana. To move mana, you need to like use it. And then it like found out that the best way to do that is just to make monsters and have it kill people. So like people have to constantly fight for their lives. And he's like, oh my, I just did this to Earth. And like, because I got portaled over here by like a, hydrogen collider explosion thing.
Hadron collider.
Yeah. And he was like, oh, I need to like get back and like be able to protect Earth and like help it. Great novel. It also does the integration of Earth, of like Earth adapting to magic super well. But yeah, skip chapter one. It's or read chapter one with the knowledge that it's not indicative of the author or his beliefs. The author also just went through a very large surgery recently and he needs love. Because he had some health issues that he needed to take care of, and he was out for a couple months. But great novel. it's definitely a good one, especially for lit RPG junkies who like numbers and dinosaurs. Because it has dinosaurs. Because who doesn't love dinosaurs? It's got velociraptors, except it's not an actual velociraptor, as they take great pains to mention. It is a Utah raptor, but it's what you think of when you get Jurassic, like when you see Jurassic Park.
We are talking, I was talking to Shami Stovall, and she is firmly team T-Rex. I like velociraptors. I'm definitely.
See, I'm going to be the weird guy. And I like ankylosaurs, man. Give me some armor. Give me a big tail.
Okay.
And the ankylosaurs. Yeah. I think that's it, yeah. Right? Yeah, the guys with the tails and the clubs and stuff. Yeah. That's just so much more fun to me.
Okay. I mean, that's dope. That's at the podcast. No. Okay. That being said, we are so over time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Like, I always say this, and you take it as though I'm like blaming you for it. But I'm here. I'm listening. I'm having fun. We should talk a bit more after the podcast is over.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's what I like. And yeah, you can listen to that on my Patreon. It is right down there, right below the podcast.
Go click.
Go click and go find it out. And it's basically got at least an hour of bonus content for every author that I have on here. And it's, I think you're like episode 68 or 69. Nice.
It's the number.
Yeah, like, so lots of hours for you to listen to like writing advice and just get to know your favorite authors. That's what I do here. Okay. So that being said, any last words?
I'll give a word for the wise to any readers. Give something a try. Even if you don't like it, or you don't like the reviews, give a shot. If it's, you know, economically feasible, if it's free on Royal Road, just give a shot. And don't be too harsh, because sometimes you might like something you didn't know you liked, and sometimes you might not like something you didn't like. I don't need to say that for me specifically, just that it's, you know, it doesn't hurt to read the first couple chapters of a novel, especially smaller ones that could use exposure. That always helps. It's very cutthroat in the lower end of the author world there, and it's anybody could use a nice word sometimes too.
Yeah, and remember, like, not everything has to be perfect.
Yes,
to warrant a good writing. Like, sure, sometimes you just don't like something. That's perfectly fine. But remember that. Harness your rage. Think about before you write. Just because you didn't like something doesn't mean it's like the worst thing that's ever been written in the history of mankind. So
I say this as somebody who reads every comment, every review. Constructive criticism is always great. Just mindlessly bashing on it is painful. Even now, like, I'm successful, and then, like, I still get a comment that's like, this is the worst thing I've ever read, and I'm like, damn, I feel bad now. Like,
yeah, it's like
it's people, authors are human too, they're doing their best. Typically
think about what you're feeling as you're writing it, and if you're feeling rage while you're reading a fantasy story,
might be time to step back a bit.
Step back a little bit and think about if the story was meant for you or not, and, you know, that sort of stuff. Like, it's okay to walk away. Anyway,
it is, and you don't have to finish every novel.
Yes,
Chris, it's great.
Yes,
I will talk too much.
We were going there. Okay, so that being said, thank you everyone for listening and or watching, and I will see you next time. And if you're on Patreon, the show goes on.